I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here going around the room. Linda Juca, Hartford current food columnist and co-owner of the Old Saybrook, Connecticut restaurant Al Forno, which is a great, great place to hang out. And Linda and Chris Prosperi, who's here from Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Linda and Chris do the Hartford Current food column called The Basics. And we have our terrific home cook, Carol Baugh of Guilford, Connecticut. And she has brought us her recipe. This is a delicious hamburger, the Greek hamburger, and it has this yogurt garlic sauce on the bun. And we've got that Thai pork burger coming your way. Real global, global stuff. So can't wait to get to all of that. Okay, for fun, you folks, here we are. We're going to give you the red, white, and blue July 4th dessert, I promise you. It's coming. But how many of the kids are standing, and the grown-ups too, pretending it's just for the kids, with the stick and the marshmallow over the fire? You know, whether on your grill in the backyard or whether you're making a bonfire, whatever you're doing, it's the most fun. I was thinking to myself, and kids, if you're listening, you might have ideas too. You can write to me. Here's the thing. What would we do to jack up toasted marshmallows or s'mores?
Could we go
to the max? What would it be?
Well, no, they're pretty perfect as they are. But what about adding some caramel sauce or even a cube of you know, the cubes of caramel that would melt in there?
God. Oh, inside,
inside,
oh.
Yeah.
That is the candy.
There's a candy.
The caramel cheese.
The caramel cheese. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah,
it's like a little cube of
what
caramel.
What an idea you have come up with.
Yeah.
Put it right in the middle.
Right.
So
or
it's like
I suppose you could just get
center.
A jar of caramel sauce and drizzle some over the top of the
sandwich. No,
but
I like your stuff. All right.
Yes. Okay.
Stuffed toasted marshmallow.
Uh-huh. So you put it like in the marshmallow.
Genius. I'm giving you the award.
No, you've got to listen to Chris. He must have something great.
No, that's, I'm in.
I am so boring. I was thinking after it's done, dip it in a bowl of chocolate. You know, it was
melted
chocolate. But no, Chris,
all
let me
right,
hear.
So first of all, I've got to admit, this happened in the winter. And how does it happen in the winter? Because at the new restaurant, we have a fireplace. And if you have a fireplace and you get bored, like when there's storms and stuff, what do you do? You make s'mores. So during the winter, the staff would get together, run next door, get some marshmallows and some, and we made s'mores all winter long in the fireplace. So one of my chefs says, you know, this would be a great dessert for the menu. And I'm like, come on, what are you talking about? So he came up with a kicked up s'mores that we do on the menu. And what he does is, I don't know if you remember, Linda does that graham cracker crust sometimes on pies.
Yeah.
Okay, so we take that as the bottom layer in a pie
tin. You crumble up the graham crackers?
Yeah, with butter, same thing. So a graham cracker crust goes on the bottom. We blind bake that, right? So you just get it nice and toasty. And then we make a chocolate ganache, which is basically just good chocolate and heavy cream.
Told you this was going to be
mixed together, right? And we make a ganache tart, basically.
Oh,
now,
boy,
before the chocolate sets, we take the mini marshmallows and we stick them in the top of this ganache tart. Right? Okay, then we let it set overnight, and right before we serve it, we blowtorch, or you can do it under the broiler, the marshmallows on top. And that is I have to give credit to Bryson. That is our s'mores tart that we serve on
That's
the menu
fantastic.
In a fine dining restaurant, and we sell a ton of them. And it was inspired on a snowy night where we actually sat in front of the fireplace and made s'mores. Because what else do you do?
Kids, right? You need to talk to
totally.
Your parents.
Yeah, right? That's a kicked up s'mores.
Wow.
Definitely. But I like the idea of serving caramel on it now. I think we may need to change the plating.
Oh, yes. We're going to – all right. Oh, I'm just dazzled.
Right? Is that
I can't
crazy?
Even speak. That
That's
these,
crazy, right?
These
That's
two
great.
Things are just – aren't they, Carol?
Yes,
they're just
they
fantastic
are.
Ideas. Caramel-stuffed marshmallows, thanks to Linda, the caramel chews – before you put it on the, you know, stick in, and before you put it over the fire, and then this dessert, Bryson and Chris, your dessert.
And let's not forget, s'mores aren't just for the summer. So when summer is over and we transition into winter and you light the fireplace, why can't you toast your marshmallows?
You can. Right.
I do it a lot, actually.
You do it? You toast marshmallows in the fireplace?
I do.
It just came to us. You're like, we have a fire.
Because I can't wait for summer.
Right.
Can you do it with a Sterno can? That's my apartment.
A candle? Fast forward to mid-January, Faith's in the kitchen over a candle, toasting her marshmallows.
I'll be there in 3 hours. Speak amongst yourselves. Okay. Here we go. We're going to get to the red, white, and blue dessert, thanks to Linda Juca, in just a little minute. But so let's go to burgers. Carol Baugh, who doesn't love burgers? I mean, you can make them if you don't eat beef. You can make them fish. You can eat them lamb. You can make them veggie. It is the most fantastic thing. Who invented the burger? Some say
Louise Lunch.
Yes. Louise Lunch, you're in New Haven.
Say that.
Well, you have to say it. You're in New Haven.
That's right.
I want to be able to leave the building after the show.
So as the story goes, yes, somebody was at a train station and was ordering from a cart long, long ago, I've got to catch, there's my train. And he said, just put it on that bread. And the hamburger was born. And they were normally just giving you meat and I don't know what.
Here in New Haven, supposedly.
Supposedly, yes. And who knows? You know, that really might be true. Okay, Carol Baugh, let me see. What have you got for your hamburger? And we have this online, by the way, at foodschmooze.org. This is the Greek treatment.
It is the Greek treatment. You know, I just got sick of cheddar all the time or whatever else, mozzarella, and I'd seen a variation of this, and I just amped it up a bit by slicing a big piece. You just, first of all, grill your hamburgers just the way you'd like them, and it's heaven because you're outside. You don't have to be in the kitchen. It's too hot. And then on the table, just put a plate of sliced feta, beautiful fresh sliced summer tomatoes, and a big bowl of tzatziki sauce, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
Yes, yeah, so this fresh. Is the yogurt garlic sauce that we all love.
Yep, it sure is. With cucumber, lots of cucumber
in it
as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly. And so, Carol, walk us through making that sauce.
Well, I've used Ina Garten's recipe. There are so many different ones, but basically you're going to be using yogurt, cucumber. She adds a little sour cream, champagne vinegar, lemon juice, olive oil, garlic, dill, and some black pepper. And you can make it days ahead, so it's ready to go.
And it is so delicious. And if you're someone who says, I don't want to do that, just go to the local Greek restaurant and say to them, give me a container of your tzatziki sauce.
Yep.
And you are set to go.
And what else could we put that on?
Everything. Fish, chicken,
yeah.
Pork.
Grilled chicken.
Because it sounds delicious.
The veggie burger.
Yeah,
you know,
the feta cheese, too. That's the key,
yeah,
too,
that's
right?
That's really what does it.
That feta cheese combination with the tzatziki.
Yep. Yeah.
That, there's a little tartness there, a little salt. Yep.
And put it all in a pita pocket or on a yummy hamburger bun, and it just oozes together, and it's out of this world.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Love a good
burger. So good. Thank you. And Carol, thanks for the recipe, which we have posted. It's Ina Garten's tzatziki sauce and Carol's instructions about how to put all this together the way that she does. And it's just layering the burger. That's what's the most fun about the burger. Yes, we have the red, white, and blue dessert coming up from Linda Juca. We want to go, since we're talking about burger time, we want to go to the recipe that I really love and this is a Thai pork burger. And this is from the book that we'd featured earlier in the year from Cooking Light, calling Global Kitchen. And we had David Joachim on the show. And it was, he and his daughter traveled all over the place. They had the best time.
Yeah.
And so he brought back this recipe for a Chiang Mai pork patties. And this is easy. And this also is on the site at foodschmooze.org. Ground pork, it's some salt and pepper, chopped shallots, cilantro, some peeled and fresh lemongrass, if you can get it. If you can't, it's in a jar in the supermarket, and that's just fine. It's going to be a step up better if it's fresh, but you don't have to. You can use the one in the supermarket. And you can use the rind of a lime, or if you have some kind of an Asian market around, get kefir leaves. You know what? Not many people know how to do that. And then you get a little bit of fresh ginger in these burgers, garlic, some chilies, and lettuce, and mint leaves on the top. So you're just really putting everything together in the food processor. You put in the shallots, and you add the cilantro and all the other ingredients, and then mix it all up with the ground pork, and then a little bit of salt and pepper. And then you can either grill these in a pan, or you can grill them right on your grill. And there you go. And on each one, on the bun, you put some lettuce leaves, the pork patty, and anything else, you know, a little squeeze of lime.
Fresh cilantro.
More fresh
leaves,
cilantro,
right?
If you want it. Yeah, because that gives
cilantro.
It that last minute.
That sounds good.
Sounds good.
We also have posted buffalo wing sauce for the best chicken burgers ever. You might remember this is one of our classics on the Food Schmooze, so we've brought that back because, oh my goodness, the response on that. It is a delicious thing. So for you wing sauce lovers and the chicken burger people, it all comes together. Just great, great, great. Also, I just wanted to mention that I do a really fast pork burger. And Linda, you might have some ideas, and Chris, you might have some ideas, Carol too, on how to step this up or do something else with it too. But one day I had some ground pork sitting around, and I love the porchetta sandwich that is done in New York at Nancy Harmon Jenkins. It's called Porchetta, the place, with just a few stools, Sarah Jenkins. Yeah. So I thought, well, what can I can't, obviously, I'm not going to make a whole pork roast in her way. So I had ground pork, and I thought, so I toasted some fennel seeds and then just threw them inside the pork burger one time. Another time, I just coated the outside of the pork burger with it and then threw in some seasonings inside the ground pork meat. And then it came out in a kind of crispy way when it had that fennel flavor. And that was really fun. So you could make a burger that way. What else could I put in there that would jack this up?
Well, if you're going the porchetta route, definitely garlic. Did you put garlic in?
I did not.
I would put garlic. Yeah, definitely.
I'd throw in fresh, some cooked bacon, too, fresh and toss
garlic.
It, or pancetta, right?
Toast
some pancetta and then fold that into it. Because love bacon in my burgers.
Sinful burger segment.
Yeah, I'm just.
You want bacon in your ground pork burger.
Oh, my gosh. Have you not heard of my cheeseburger, my bacon cheeseburger?
No.
Oh, my gosh. My bacon cheeseburger, I take ground beef, right?
But this is ground pork.
Yes,
you
can use this idea with pork.
All right.
I take ground beef, throw it in a bowl. I throw in a big handful of cooked bacon that I just crumble up, right? Mm-hmm. And then I like Swiss, but whatever cheese you like.
Is this in the burger meat?
I cube the Swiss into, like, let's say, half-inch cubes, and I toss that in there. I hit it with a splash of Worcestershire sauce, a little dash of the Frank's hot sauce, and then I cube ice cold butter, like almost frozen, and I cube them into quarter-inch pieces. And right, and then I fold all that together, and I make big fat burgers. And I take a little dimple and push it down in the middle, and then I grill those to medium rare.
Whoa,
and that's a bacon cheeseburger.
Whoa, that definitely is. But when was your last cholesterol test?
I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm fine with cholesterol.
Love the
you don't statins. Eat those. You don't eat those all the time, but boy, when you do, that little bit of butter in. Ooh. Think about it.
Oh, sure.
Just think about the little pockets of melted butter you will encounter when you bite into that cheeseburger.
Yum. You know, I just put a little teeny pat of butter, not even a whole, you know, just a shaving of butter on my hamburger before serving it to sort of restore it. It's a flavoring agent.
Yeah,
right?
Chris.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, it makes it
mine's
feel
a flavoring
very,
agent.
Yes. No. Just a little more of it. Just in
a little
case.
Bit. And quarter inch cubes. Just, you know, a good amount of them.
I sound like
cubes.
A raving health nut compared to you.
Right. And in all these burgers. One last thing. In all these burgers, don't forget salt on top, right? Very important.
Salt on top.
My first chef I worked for told me the difference between a good burger and a phenomenal burger is salt. And just a sprinkling of salt on top.
But not in the meat when you're...
No, just on top.
Only on top.
On top before...
You can do both.
After it comes out
of the... No, when you grill it. before you grill it, a good
amount. Oh, right. And doesn't it help it not to stick so much
everything.
To the pan?
Yeah.
Right.
And more than you think you would use because a lot of it's going to fall off.
I'll be darned.
Okay. Yeah.
That's and that's awesome. The difference between a good burger and a great burger.
Oh, yes. All right. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make it. We have more burger stuff to talk about. We have the red, white, and blue dessert for the 4th of July. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back. Out of the black, skipping the track, taking it back. Cosmonaut, I got shunned for the refund. But you're restless in your best dress. I'm depressed at your swanky dress. Live in the machinery, salt sea of the hex you be. Hell bounds around the compound. Make the word swell in the villanelle. Ah well, you got the dweller, dispeller. Tremble when you disassemble. Scrawl a rough map on the fool's cap. Mr. Weinstein drinking a strike nine. That's why I compel you to swim the wishing well. Steam it like a vegetable, green like a vegetable, burn it like a vegetable.
Not cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Linda Juka is here. She and Chris do the Basics food column in the Hartford Courant. Eugenia Matruda, Marion Roy, our special guest, home cook, Carol Baugh of Guilford, Connecticut, and producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, thank you also for listening. And we've been having Burger Heaven on this show. We have Linda's red, white, and blue dessert coming up for you know what. Well, here is a question about the burger. I don't tend to grill my roll, my bun, for the cheeseburger because I sometimes like that sort of soft steamed thing going on. I like to keep it soft. But the other day, I had reason to toast a burger bun to a golden brown the way you would do on a griddle in one of these breakfast joints with butter.
Oh boy!
And I was looking at it and I thought, now what if I'm so bad at, you know, being unable to control the flames on my grill, and I have a tip for you on that in just a second, that it tends to go a little bit, get a little charred. If I put the buttered roll on the grill, I'm afraid I wouldn't get it off in time for it to be golden. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe in the house, before people come, just sauteing these
do it in a frying pan.
What do you think?
Okay, yeah, that would work.
Sure.
Would it give enough of a beautiful butter crispy?
Oh, totally. But also think about your grill again. You know, just find, and I always do this, even if you're building your own, like, you know, charcoal thing, always build in a little cooler spot. Or if you have a gas grill, just have one of the jets turned down. You know, that's a good place to just sort of leave it sit.
Except I'm going to give myself.
Oh, you have the. Okay.
And a tip, because this is
for
the most wonderful device for flare-ups. It's called the Grill Grate. And
really?
Yes, and we have this posted at our site, Grill Grate. And it is anodized aluminum, and it looks like several railroad tracks together. So it's raised up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The rails of that the train would go on are raised up, and there are multiples. And you can get two, three of these panels, depending on the size of your grate. It acts like infrared heat because of the way it conducts the heat.
Ah.
And it has holes in it, in addition to the raised rails. And so what you've got here is, no matter what you're cooking, if you're like me and you get these spots of flare-ups, mm-hmm. and so you get these charred pieces of either fish or chicken or burgers or vegetables, especially with the vegetables. This device is so fantastic. And you just scrub it with a wire brush to clean it off. You can put them in
that
the dishwasher.
Awesome. Mm.
They are, and they get better with age.
Oh, as they season, yeah.
Honestly, on Food Schmooze,
okay,
places. So
yeah.
We've got it on our site, foodschmooze.org. Just look it right up.
And that's something you would use every time you grill.
You just
keep it
out
leave
there.
Leave it right on the grill.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's the most wonderful device and invention.
I need that because I don't know if you sometimes the I learned this is a DNA thing. I got this from my father that when I turn away, even if I turn my back to the grill for 5 seconds, when I turn around, it's engulfed in flames. And I don't know what it is, if I'm just over oiling or if I'm just not, but mm-hmm. I need something like that to just, because I get distracted sometimes. And, you know, and then fire, but that would help me, right?
You said the biggest joke is the day I decided that I was going to, I thought, let's do something other than chicken. And so I got duck breasts and proceeded to grill them with the skin on the grill. Well, it was like a five alarm fire.
Did you feed the fire department?
Oh, my goodness. It was a strange, it was so outrageous. I thought, oh, I see that that's not a good idea.
You know, but see those, right? That would help a little.
Well, pre-grilling in the cast iron skillet would have been a really good idea. Or doing the whole thing in the oven afterward would have been a really good idea. But anyway, that's what I did. These and other mistakes. Stay tuned. So,
I'd suggest, actually, this would go perfectly with all of Carol's ingredients, and that would be a lamb burger, you know, ground lamb.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
And you do find ground lamb in the mm-hmm. supermarket, and certainly you can ask the butcher to grind it.
I love it.
Great idea.
Chris,
I might try that with lamb.
Linda, on your restaurant menus, how often do I hear rumors that most people prefer the other proteins to lamb, and that so that it is a minority of people who will use, and Carol, you've worked in a restaurant, mm-hmm. who will order the lamb. I'm among them because I love lamb. Mm-hmm. Is that correct that people?
I think it's a harder sell.
Yeah. I think, but it's funny, though, because certain things, I put rack of lamb on the menu, and then that goes out the window, and all of a sudden everyone loves lamb, and I think it might be a little milder. But lamb burger, if I have lamb burger next to a hamburger on the menu,
right,
then
it's
the
not
yeah, the hamburger is 10
funny.
To 1.
It's not going
to
sell.
Yeah,
really
it's 10 to 1. And I've even had people say, ooh, the lamb burger sounds great. Can I get those toppings on the hamburger? On the beef burger?
On the beef burger. Yeah, that's what Carol does.
Yeah, I'll take that on that. But I do a fish burger, and it's the one I get from my chef, and it's canned tuna. And it's an amazing little fish burger that you just take some onion, canned tuna, you mix it with a little bit of breadcrumb, Italian dressing, and you make these patties, and they grill
capers
up great. Yeah, no, nothing. I mean, you could, sure, you could add any of that. But it's just a very simple, it's his snack for the end of the night. And he does it on a George Foreman grill, but you could very easily do it on the, right? And it's funny because
can you run through that again?
Canned tuna.
In olive oil or in water?
He only uses the pouches, so those are the water ones, right? So canned tuna, then he does chopped onion, Italian dressing, a little bit of mustard, and breadcrumb.
Wow.
And that sort of holds it together. And I tell you, I teach seafood classes.
No egg in there, right?
No egg. Okay. No, I teach seafood classes, right? And I always throw that in as a funny kind of, oh, this is what you can do. This is the seafood. It's canned, you know. And every time I do it, when I get the comments back, that's the recipe. Not tuna, not scallops, not, you know, bass, not swordfish, not lobster. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, that tuna burger was the best thing you ever did. And it really is just some stuff that you have. I mean, again, craft Italian dressing.
He puts the bread on it and then puts it in the Foreman grill.
He puts it right on the Foreman grill.
He'll
toast the bread separately. But yes, yeah. And or he says sometimes he even has it without it, with just a little lettuce.
Wow, I think I might have to have that for dinner tonight.
I'm thinking that's
I can give
so
you the recipe
good.
For that because we've done it as a column. And
well, I'm now
again,
gonna,
when we did it as
I'm
a
just
column,
throw, I'm throwing everything in.
Yeah.
And then think
about all the stuff you can add to it, olives and capers, like you said, right? And it makes it, and who doesn't have canned tuna fish?
Right. I mean, exactly. I use that canned tuna to throw into pasta all the time, but I don't know why I didn't
form it
into
a hamburger.
Ooh, how fun. All right, we're going to go to Linda Juca. because Linda's been nudging us to try this red, white, and blue dessert. How can we get red, white, and blue onto the holiday menu?
Well, look, it's pretty easy, and you've got some choices. I think it's a season for blueberries and raspberries, the first raspberries of the summer, which I think together they're just a terrific combination. Now, you could do a shortcake, and the white comes in with the whipped cream. Mm-hmm. You could do a blueberry-raspberry traditional pie, you know, two-crust pie with ice, with vanilla ice cream.
Or one crust,
exactly, or a lattice top. Or do a blueberry-raspberry crisp, again, with ice cream. And a crisp is easy to do.
There's no dough.
You know, there's baking involved, and it's hot out, but, you know, it's not going to take the entire day. Plus, I'd say to really get in the mood, go pick your own blueberries and raspberries. I go up to Scott's Orchards in Deep River near where I live. To me, it's so relaxing. I walk by this huge field of sunflowers. Then I go into the blueberries. Blueberries are great because you don't have to bend down to pick them, unlike strawberries.
Right.
And it's peaceful. It's quiet. You know, if it's overcast, it's probably even better if it's overcast. But then you've got all these. You've got tons of blueberries and raspberries to do something
so
with.
So help me figure this out. Why isn't that the birds don't get the ones that are in these pick-your-own places?
Well,
they
usually have netting over the whole.
But not while we're picking.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Usually they've got a structure, you know, tall fencing, and they drape the entire thing with.
Not at my place.
With netting.
Okay.
Maybe they net after the. You know, they
when
they'll
people
un-net.
Go home.
Yeah, because the people will chase the birds.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. So because I think how it's
net afterwards. Yeah.
You know, anyone who's tried to grow blueberries once, as I have, the birds loved me.
They do. Right.
So those are instant ideas. There's not a lot of preparation.
No.
You can buy or pick your own. There are certainly tons of pick your own places around. So,
and you can find tons of recipes online or in cookbooks. And, you know, if it's a recipe for blueberry crisp, then you just, you know, calls for however many cups of blueberries, then you just add half and half.
Or you could just have a big heaping bowl of vanilla ice cream and throw on the raspberries and the blueberries,
true.
And you've got instant red, white,
too.
And blue.
Exactly.
For the lazy person.
That's even
like
easier
me.
And delicious.
Right. That's so right. I was trying to think if it would be possible to melt the ice cream, the vanilla ice cream, ahead of time, let it go soft, and then to mix in the blueberries and raspberries into your melted ice cream and then put that in the freezer.
Just set it.
You've got a fresh fruit, red, white, and blue ice cream.
As long as you don't let it melt too much.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Brilliant isn't maybe the word. It's more like, how is she going to get out of baking?
Yeah. But it has to look like you did some work, right? You can't just do like Lori and put them on there. You're
it's like
1950. Look, I baked for you.
I put an egg in here.
I made ice cream for you. I see it. I like it.
I bought this for you.
You know what I do? I do the... Back to my favorite Pillsbury, I go, instead of buying the Pillsbury pie crust, I go in the freezer section and I buy the Pillsbury puff pastry, right? And I cut them into either squares or rounds and just bake them just like that. And if you bake them in a 450-degree oven, you'll notice they'll pop right up. And they'll be about, you know, maybe 3 inches tall.
Yeah.
And then I take a small knife and I just cut the top off. And then sort of push all that stuff down, and then you have a little cup, and then you take your raspberries and blueberries, macerate them in a little bit of sugar and some Grand Marnier, you know, some brandy, and then you just pour that into the little puff pastry cup and put whipped cream on top.
Oh, that sounds very nice.
And then it looks like you baked something, and really you just went to the store and bought Pillsbury puff pastry, cut it into a square, and tossed it in the oven.
Oh, wow.
See, then it looks like you're right. See?
This is fun.
And don't forget, the most important part when you're doing that is flour. Make sure you put flour around the kitchen, right?
To make
on
it
the
look
cabinet,
like it, right.
A little bit on the
make
floor.
Make it look like you're slaving away
right?
all day.
Yep. Put towels everywhere.
So, on your forehead.
Yeah, on your forehead. Yep, yeah.
You know, so, can we combine your idea with the pastry with Faith's idea with the ice cream, the raspberries, and
totally.
The blueberries,
yes.
And scoop it into your shell of pastry. Okay, now I'd be
perfect
in that.
Perfect marriage, right there. See, you put us two together, except Faith has got the ice cream machine on the counter, and she poured some cream in there and dumped it out so it looks like it was just used, and I've got the flour on me, and we're like, we finally got it done. But really, we're in the back sipping champagne.
Well, know, it's so, it costs $8,000 now to have people over, you know, as the price of everything goes up and we've all gotten so precious about everything. And I think to myself, by the time, I am not I'm making the dessert because I just feel that I'm a terrible baker. I don't want to inflict that on people. So I'm buying the dessert, and that ends up being as expensive sometimes.
Bless the
bakers who do this, because even if I tried, I couldn't come close. Now we're up to, here comes another $60, you know, because you've gotten some fantastic thing. And so I certainly don't want to deprive them of their income. But every once in a while, I think, can I just go simple on dessert? So I love your ideas. I really, really do. I have a friend who had these big 4th of July parties every year, and he lives in Milford, Connecticut, and he would do it up on the bluff overlooking Long Island Sound and haul out the speakers and play all these, you know, sort of military themes and
patriotic songs
up and down the coast.
The British are coming.
Fireworks going off all over the sky and this music booming as dusk falls and people having, usually his was chili, Texas chili.
Ooh, yeah.
So really just a wonderful time. So I see if you're having a party, having, you know, some of these great songs that I know often bring a tear to my eye. It's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and music is part of the party, right? It's
Definitely. Part
of the theming and the, right? Goes in hand with, you know, putting the red, white, and blue tablecloth out and, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but I save stuff for certain holidays, right? Like people have their traditional Thanksgiving gear. You know, it's cool to have a couple things floating around for the 4th of July. I have a red, white, and blue tablecloth that has some stars in it that I always bring out and put that over a picnic table or whatever, and that sort of gets you in the
festive.
In that mood.
And if it's at night, you can give everybody a sparkler.
Sure. Right. Definitely. And those are legal.
Or
and,
you can put sand in a pot and stick them in, and then when it's time, say everybody stand back, and then you get
go
a couple
and
helpers and you just light them all and watch them, you know, to your little mini fireworks without the danger.
And I think that sets the mood, right? Sets the tone of the party. You know, and a lot of people are telling me about Pinterest now, that website where you can get like, and you can share these ideas.
Tons of ideas.
Yeah, and I have friends that like do Pinterest parties where they'll form a page on Pinterest or whatever it is, and then everyone will join in and say, okay, I'm going to bring this, or I'm going to do the red, white, and blue cups, and I'm going to put the fruit salad in that. And then you have everyone sort of planning the party with you if you're going to do like a potluck. And Pinterest becomes this like center for, okay, now who's bringing what, and how are we theming it, and what's the music? And it becomes this whole, right, like community putting a party together instead of one person doing 90% of the work.
Yes, stick with us for the party planning. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We've got lots more July fun coming your way. Please support your local food growers and food makers, and you can find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails we feature online right now or anytime at foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Something in my food, Lord. Yeah. I believe my woman, she's putting something in my food. It used to be I didn't love her. And I've changed my whole attitude. Oh, yes, I have. Now, what makes me so suspicious and got me so afraid? Since I met this woman,
I've changed all the games I play. I used to be a real playboy, a man about town. She's done something to me and makes me wanna settle down. I believe my woman is putting something in my food. I didn't wanna believe it, but since I met that woman, I changed my whole attitude. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Oh, did nothing. He just burp?
Yeah, I never noticed that before. That's the best part.
Oh, oh, so I couldn't resist. I know we have to take some time.
To clarify, that wasn't me.
Me to pick the song with the belching in it. Yes.
Party music, huh? So I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. I am with Linda Juca and Chris Presbury and Carol Baugh and Lori Mack, and we are having fun right here in the middle of it all. This is kind of party central for us at the moment. Okay, Chris, we've got to talk about the Hole in the Ground Festival, because for those of you who don't know about this, we'll explain in just a minute. And then you've got a bean salad.
Yeah, because I think, you know, as a chef or even a home cook, every once in a while you come across a recipe that I always say is a keeper. And to me, there's a couple things in a recipe that make it that way. One, it has to be very simple to make. And two, very few ingredients, so you're not like, you know, chopping and doing 800 things to make this one dish. And three, I think everyone has to go wow when they eat it. And I can say honestly, I've come across maybe three of those in my entire career that are at this level. And this one totally took me by surprise, because when the person who does this recipe first told me about it, I was so skeptical. I was like, you're kidding. There's nothing in here. How could it taste good? And this is a green bean and potato salad that I think Linda's mother taught her, right?
Grandmother
taught her.
Might make it.
There's nothing in this salad. So it shouldn't taste. People shouldn't say, oh my gosh, this is one of the best things I ever had. What is this? And it's a couple things. It's the quality of ingredients, and it's just the right combinations of things going on in it. And it's a green bean and potato salad. And help me along with it, because I got to remember, it has a little bit of mint.
Mint.
And what else?
The secret. Olive oil.
Olive oil.
Salt and pepper.
And salt and pepper.
Linda, walk us through it. How does this get made?
We just did it.
Well, you know, my grandfather always had a garden, so there was fresh mint, fresh basils, fresh green beans. But, you know, it's fresh green beans that are steamed, potatoes that
boiled.
Are cooked,
yeah.
That are boiled, steamed, you know, chop the potatoes into quarters. And then when it was still warm, she used to just toss it lightly with olive oil, salt, pepper, and throw in some chopped mint. And that was it. We ate it at room temperature.
I know, right? Your mouth is like mine. I'm like, whatever.
It's the mint that...
And it is so...
I mean, sometimes she made it with basil, but it was really the mint that did it.
It's...
That must be an Italian thing, because my grandmother had a version of that, but didn't put the mint in it, and I think she put oregano.
And there were no potatoes.
Yeah. There was definitely green beans and potatoes.
But it is, like I said, you know, sometimes a recipe really is magic, right? I can't explain it, because if you, as a trained chef, if you were to say to me, potatoes, green beans, a little bit of olive oil, mint, salt, and pepper, I'd go,
all right.
But where's the spark?
Good.
And I keep thinking, I was like, you got to have some, where's some peppers or some – how about some chopped onion? How about some vinegar or lemon juice?
Well, but
blah,
some of it,
blah,
too,
blah,
is
– blah, blah, blah,
you know what I'm thinking about? Those frozen haricot vert, the baby string beans at, at Trader Joe's.
Right. You totally in a pinch.
I mean, it's fresh, so you want to go use them, get them. But these are practically picked and frozen right on the spot.
But some of it, I think, also is – and you could do a whole discussion about this – the fact that it's not ice cold out of the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Americans, I think, we're so tuned in to either things being boiling hot or ice cold, you know, for food safety reasons, whatever. But, you know, this is at room temperature, so you really get the full flavors of the ingredient.
It's magic, and it's so easy. And I make this and bring it to places, and people just don't believe that – that's what's – because there's got to be more – right, don't you? When you taste something that's so good, you go, there's got to be more to it than just some olive oil and mint.
And you know what's fun? Even if you don't have a garden, if you have one pot or just a little bit of soil near your step
– you can do green
your
beans.
Your front step – no, you can do mint because mint will grow anywhere. Yeah. If you grow mint,
you'll have more than you ever need.
You're trying to give it away. So let's talk about the Hole in the Ground festivals. When I was a million years ago a newspaper reporter and editor in eastern Connecticut at the Journal Inquirer, there out there were these Hole in the Ground festivals. And what that meant was that people had, and there would be some competition about this, people had these baked bean recipes that were treasures that go back to the families, through the family's history, and had these special ingredients, and it would be fresh beans in these earthenware crocks, these fresh beans and mustard and maple, and you know, everybody had a secret thing going on.
It's a New England baked bean kind of thing.
Right. Yes, right. And so you dig a hole in the ground, and these go in and with coals and stuff,
right.
And
oh,
then
sure.
The dirt goes back, and these slow cook under the ground.
There's
a like a clambake.
It is like a clambake. It sounds
festival comes out, and out comes the
all
begins,
their beans.
And then out come the beans, and everybody's trying and tasting.
Oh my
and
God.
Really fantastic. So what'd you come up with, Chris?
All right, I found a Yankee Magazine article, and it's about the Smith/Smart family in Maine that have an annual gathering, and I'm still in awe over the fact that this is how they do it. They actually dig a hole. So they dig a hole and they put a fire in it. And when the fire's burned
with charcol?
With charcoal or whatever, wood, whatever. And when the when the coals are red hot, you add rocks to it, right? So you put rocks on top and the rocks get really hot. And then you put that to one side of the hole and then you carefully set the pot with the lid, nice closed lid because you're going to bury this, nestle the rocks around the pot, and then you cover the pot and the hole with 4 to 6 inches of soil, checking to make sure the lid is on tight and no dirt gets in the beans, and you cook for 8 hours, and then you shovel off the dirt, beans are done.
It's pretty wild.
What's in the recipe?
This is just their version of it.
And you can see this on YouTube, I guess, right, Chris?
Yeah. There's actually YouTube videos too, but this is a Yankee Magazine article, and it's basically a pound of beans, some salt pork, and they just do dry mustard, salt, pepper, and molasses, and then water.
Well, so
pretty simple.
Earthenware
pot. What kind of beans are they using?
They're using yellow eye or pea beans work well. Yellow eye or pea beans.
More elaborate. I've heard
And I'm sure this isn't their recipe, too, right? Because this is out on Yankee Magazine. I'm sure the secret spices and herbs. Those are the basics.
Would happen if you put a little bourbon in there? How would that be?
Sure it would.
Sweet, smoky, Hello.
Okay, and what?
Brown sugar.
Brown sugar
or molasses, right? Yeah. Because I think molasses is the key to
Let's make up a recipe. Okay, so a little bourbon, some brown sugar.
Yep, bourbon, brown sugar. I would do salt pork and onion. Salt pork is a definite.
What if we did put in just a touch of chorizo?
Yeah, would that, get a little Spanish.
Now, do we need it with the salt pork? Do we want to put it in?
I would put it instead of the
one
salt
or the
pork.
Other. Yes, right.
Yeah, I would put it instead because that adds flavor, right? Garlic and paprika and all the stuff that's in that. Plus, you get the fat coming out of the sausage.
Yeah.
That would be yum.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Pork belly,
pork belly. I mean, and then spices. I mean, I think that's what they don't have in there, right? You got to put some kind of spices in there.
Yeah. What would go with the bourbon and the brown sugar and the
Maybe some coriander, cracked coriander would be nice in there, or
a touch of cinnamon,
but
not much.
Mm. Yeah, some bay leaf, right? You got to have some herbs and spices in there. That's the key to all good baked beans. And they're holding out on us, the Smith family.
Do we want any heat in there? But not so it's hot.
No, just back note.
A back note. So what would that be? What do we want?
One seeded jalapeno and just put it in whole and then you can pull it out at the end.
With no seeds in it.
One seeded jalapeno, just drop it in whole and then pull it out at the end. If you like hot, I have friends that when I say I like hot.
Well, you just can't please a crowd.
Yeah, exactly. Because some people hot is like volcanic and some people hot is like me. And that's
like
one dash.
Did we put garlic in? Or
no,
we'd
have
to.
We'd have to, I think.
Do we?
Yeah, I think so. I love
onions.
Garlic.
Are we making chili?
I know.
Yeah, the traditionalists are all calling in now, right? They're all emailing going, it doesn't have onions, it doesn't have garlic, it doesn't have...
chorizo.
Yeah. But I think this is it, right? That would be cool to if you're adventurous, right? And you wanted to do a backyard party. Why couldn't you do chili in this manner?
Yeah, and then...
You totally could put beef cubes in there and make a beef chili in the ground.
Of course you could.
Right? This is just an old method of cooking.
What would be the advantage? Would there be an advantage to the cooking
style? Don't you see the excitement in my face? What is this? This is the first slow cooker.
I guess we have to credit the East Coast Native American Indians with this way of cooking.
This is the first slow cooker.
Oh, really?
So the crock pot came from who?
Well, I mean, it's the pit in the ground way of cooking. So
even the colonial, cooking in fireplaces, they used to put the ashes and
around the pot, over the top of the pot.
Yeah. Wow, how fantastic!
I found the origins of the crock pot here today on the show. I am in heaven. This is going to go in my crock pot. Listen, this is going to go in my crock pot museum one day because since I have so many, eventually there will be a museum.
But Native Americans.
Have to
credit.
Get credit. They have to. There has to be a whole section.
Remember how Calvin Trillin used to say in The New Yorker, I remember that famous column he did where he said, how do you explain that the bread and board opens somewhere in California at the same time it opens somewhere in New England? This is just the way life is, that people have these ideas and these...
At the same time.
And this was before the internet.
Right.
Now you can see that happen so fast and
everything
see things
comes
spread.
From somewhere.
Well, what meat do we want to serve with our hole in the ground at our hole in the ground party?
I'm going in the other direction.
You want to make
what
chili?
I'm thinking about what kind of meat can you put in there. It doesn't have to be chili, but with the spices.
I'm
but
thinking
just
I'd like
chunks.
Something grilled for myself.
Like
would
a steak?
I like
grilled chicken? I think
grilled chicken. I mean, obviously hot dogs and beans, but or maybe kielbasa.
Sausage.
What
kielbasa.
If we did a kielbasa?
Or grilled pork tenderloin. Pork would be good.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Grilled pork tenderloin.
Or the chorizo sausage in there.
Well, yeah, we can go. Yeah.
Do we need cloves in the baked beans? Or is that too much?
I think those are the kind of things that were in it originally.
You know, we could do Indian baked beans.
Oh, take it back to them.
Yeah, and we could do the white beans with the Indian flavors. Wouldn't that be fun?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
it's
a whole different way. I mean, think about all the different things you could do it. Do in there. I mean, it could be an oven. It could be all the different things you could do in the ground, right? This is going backwards, not forward, right? Because now we have all these high-tech tools and stuff. But this is really going back to the beginning of cooking.
Who's the food person who moved from the Mediterranean to Sonoma, California, and did that cookbook of earthenware dishes that get cooked in the oven? And in fact, in California, there are so many people who still make these. You remember the Romertoff chicken cooker?
Oh, sure. But I don't remember who that was.
They make these casseroles. I just heard, I'm blanking on her name. Anyway, this is that style of cooking. This
in the pots,
goes through so many cultures.
And it goes way back, right?
It's tajine cooking, too.
It is tajine. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Clay pot, right?
And we're just trying to, as usual, build a party around it.
Oh, my gosh. Think about everyone. Think about the wow factor of getting the shovel and opening the holes, right? You just you don't even tell people. You know,
so
and everyone's like
lawn.
Everyone's looking around going, where's the
nothing
food?
Nothing in the kitchen.
Yeah, there's nothing in the kitchen. You don't have anything on the grill yet. And everyone's like, oh, no, it's coming. It's coming. And you actually have three holes that are just sort of smoldering. Right?
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Really fun.
Totally. Okay,
actually,
you grab
really
a shovel, we're getting dinner.
It really is like the clam bake, which is a fantastic party, except it's really difficult to find a place where you can even do a clam bake
anymore,
these days.
Yeah. So there are beaches in where my family is on the Cape where you apply for a permit.
Oh, you can,
they
really?
They give so many out, and we dig a hole every year for my sister's birthday at the beach. We dig a hole and in go the logs. We all carry the logs down, and it's a big deal with the lobsters get thrown in and the potatoes and corn. And so I wonder if you can do that here. I hope so. All right. Thank you all so much. Linda Juca, Chris Prosperi, Lori Mack, and Carol Ball. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We are online anytime, including right now. Find the recipes, food, products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails at foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. We'll be right back.
bodies when they come to mind.